Welcome to, or welcome back to, a Runner's Life podcast. As you can tell, my voice is a little bit huskier than normal. I lost my voice, but it's now back. And don't worry, I'm not trying to be a poor man's UK version of the legend Barry White, or even trying to audition for a bad, low-end East London gangster movie. The upside is my voice does return to its normal rhythm and cadence, as you'd normally expect in the interview. So before we dive into this conversation with Kevin Quinn, I just want to give you a little bit of a background to who he is. So a couple of episodes ago, back in episode 89, I spoke to Steph Davis, who won the British Olympic marathon trials and qualified for the Tokyo Olympics and will represent Team Great Britain. And I remember watching the race and thinking initially, I know that guy who's pacing, that's Kevin. And yeah, I'm really grateful to be able to speak to him today and share some of his story. Kevin is a marathon runner and head coach at Team Real Runners. He's a father of three. In 2016, after running 2 hours and 25 minutes at the 2015 London Marathon, Kevin found out that he had four holes in his heart, the largest being 1.78 centimeters. And that basically means that he was losing around 20 to 25% of oxygen with every heartbeat. We dive into this side and some of the other crucial moments that have occurred in his life that have made him the runner and the person that he is today. And I'm always trying to get better, so I always try to find out something about my guests in terms of mindset, training, that they can share with me, and hopefully that you can take it forward into your training. Okay, so with that being said, enough of me waffling on, let's head to the conversation. Hi Kevin, welcome to A Runner's Life podcast. How are you?
Yeah, super. Really good, Marcus. Thanks for having me on. It's a real pleasure to chat to you.
Likewise. I'm really looking forward to talking with you today. And as you know, this podcast is called A Runner's Life. So what does a runner's life mean to you?
Oh, good question. I guess a runner's life to me is I'm just a normal bloke who has a busy job, three kids, and I just get out there and do something that I'm passionate about and lucky to be able to do. So I guess just a normal guy that just runs, just puts one foot in front of the other.
I love the way you're just completely downplaying everything, Kevin. You've got an amazing story in terms of like how you started, and I know it's sort of been covered in, you know, other interviews, but your why for running is really powerful. And I think, like, again, that's one side of it, but also the enjoyment as well.
Certainly, yeah, you know, I love it. It's, as we all know, running can be super hard, you know, especially like days today. I got out for a run, it was cold, it was snowing, and you know, you put one foot in front of the other because you love it. So I do enjoy it, but it's hard work.
But that's the thing though, sometimes we can overcomplicate running, and it simply is just putting one foot in front of the other.
Definitely. I mean, if I didn't love it, I wouldn't do it. And I think that's the same with a lot of runners out there. We moan about it, but we secretly kind of love it to pieces. You know, I'm just fortunate to have running in my life. And if you took it away from me, I don't know what I'd do, Marcus.
I think a lot of people can relate to that, because I think sometimes in our lives, especially, it can be quite comfortable. So for me personally, sometimes you need to do something like running, because it kind of pushes you outside that physical and that mental, that gives you a bit of a physical and a mental challenge.
Yeah.
Which you don't always get, you know, behind a desk or, you know, whatever. So I think it kind of takes us back to that sort of primeval part of ourselves, which is quite cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So we've spoken about what a runner's life means to you, but we are obviously more than just runners. Can you share a non-running passion or interest that you also enjoy?
I guess my biggest passion, just hanging out with my family, my kids, just seeing them grow and become the incredible people that they are becoming. So for me, just standing back and just, you know, watching them just be fantastic. Like for me, that's great. I just love seeing my family and my kids just do incredible things. Watching my daughter, you know, during lockdown, 5 years old, being able to cycle for the first time, that's just priceless.
Yeah, being able to spend time with the kids has been amazing. But also I feel as a parent, our kids are almost like mirrors back to ourselves. They highlight things that we also need to work on in ourselves. This isn't like a counseling session where you have to admit anything, by the way.
But I agree with you. You know, you know, like my kids, I see them get upset with one another. You know, they may have a little tiff, but then 5 minutes later, it's all water under the bridge, and they're back there cuddling and playing. You know, with one another. I think we can learn a lot from kids.
Absolutely. And you've got three kids, and I know a question you must get asked a lot, and it must annoy you, is like, how do you kind of juggle it all? You know, working, training at a high level, and still be a present father.
I guess coming back to that first question of runner's life, I love it. So you kind of make time, right? We all have 24 hours in the day, and it's how best we use that time. So for me, it's important that I get up extra early. If I want to run in the morning, I run, get out for a run. That box is ticked. Then help get the kids ready for school, crack on with my day at work. And then I will try and get another run in before I get home. Because yeah, once you walk back through that door, bath time, bedtime, story time, it's hard work. I was saying on another podcast recently, anyone that says that bath time, bedtime is this real wonderful, beautiful moment as a parent, I mean, like, you step in my house, it's just nuts. It's crazy. But yeah, we all have 24 hours in the day, and we're all fortunate to be able to do what we love. So it's trying to make time. Your time management is important.
Absolutely. And sometimes I feel like I'm like James Brown at that particular time with your kids, because you're like, get up, get down, get up, get down. I had a pound every time I said it, I'd be a millionaire.
Oh God, my poor neighbours. I mean, like, trying to get the kids to, you know, that getting ready for school and get them out that door for 8:30, you know, it's like, come on, quick, shoes on. And one of them hasn't got their shoes on. Or where's your jacket? I don't know. Where did you put my jacket? It's like, it's your jacket. You know, it's the joys of being a parent, but yeah, I love it. I wouldn't want it any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's chaos, but yeah, it's fun at points. Look back. Absolutely. Let's just take a quick pause to tell you about the sponsors of the podcast. This episode is supported by Let's Do This. It is a company that's mission is to make it easier for people to find their perfect race, whether you're looking for a 5K fun run or a double Ironman. Let's Do This list more mass participation sports events than any other website on the planet. These events include running, triathlon, cycling, obstacle racing, swimming, and many others. To get £10 off selected events, please use the discount code, or one word, A Runner's Life, and use the link www.letsdothis.com/A Runner's Life. Now let's head back to the conversation. So what is one of the best pieces of advice that you've been given for your running journey? And I appreciate there might be a few.
Yeah, I think consistency, it's a real good one. Just, you know, no heroes in training, just consistent training, and just enjoy that process was a really, really good one. You know, there's no point in having 1 week where it's crazy mileage and the next week you're body is battered and you're in that hole, and it takes a while to get out that hole because you're super tired from the week before. So just consistent training and just enjoy the process has been a real good piece of advice for me. Equally, listening to your body, that's another one that's always stuck with me ever since I was a young kid running. It's your body, you are the best judge of how it is feeling. So if it's telling you to take a rest day, or, you know, equally, if it's telling you to maybe push on a little bit on your run, listen to it.
I find that latter bit of advice about listening to your body, I think that gets better as you get a little bit more experience, because I feel when you're younger, you feel a little bit like indestructible.
Oh, absolutely. As a 41-year-old bloke now, I feel like my body is about to fail its MOT, you know, like it feels broken quite a lot of the time. But as a younger runner, yeah, you know, you certainly do recover, and I guess you take it for granted a little bit how you can bounce back after a hard training session. But yeah, certainly as you get older, it's extra important to listen to your body. Just again, if you want that consistency, listen to it.
And that's the thing, that consistency is one of the most important things. And it's almost like the simple answers, like, you know, sometimes people don't want to take on board because they want to think, okay, what's the secret workout? What if I do this as a recovery type thing? I'm obviously sleep and everything is important, and diet, I mean, we're going off topic, but the consistency, you know, showing up and just giving your best for that day. For example, like, your best might be a 3 out of 10, but give it the best 3 out of 10 for that day.
yeah, for sure, definitely. You know, and if you're giving it 9 out of 10 every single day, you know you're going to come slightly unstuck later down the line. So, you know, just equally rest days, recovery days, allow that body time to repair, and keeping on top of all those extra bits, stretching, the nutrition, the S&C, those marginal gains. And if you do that all sensibly, you should be able to get that consistent training to be able to then hit your goals and hit your aims and your future targets.
Absolutely. And I mean, we could go off on a tangent about those kind of things that you spoke about, but I don't want to bore people with the details for this. Because it's the kind of things that we just want to go out running, but those other things are so important as well.
Yeah.
To the whole sort of picture. So putting running to one side.
Yep.
Can you share the last thing that made you laugh?
Last thing that made me laugh? Probably this morning. Kids and I dancing. Yeah. Kind of, Alexa, play this song. And yeah, just all of us having a bit of a boogie downstairs. So yeah, just every day with the kids just makes me smile and laugh.
It's amazing, like, how kids can make us do that. Because I feel sometimes as adults, I might be making a sweeping statement, but we can take life quite seriously and forget to actually just have a laugh, you know, just to find, you know, the humor in the day.
Definitely. You get one shot and just enjoy it and just smile and be grateful that we're here.
Good stuff. I thought you were going to go all Eminem 8 Mile on me there and start rapping.
Oh,
I wasn't quite sure.
Oh, goodness. No, you certainly don't want to hear my rapping.
Is it as good as your running, though?
Oh, I think I'm slightly better at running than I am at rapping. I'll come back to you, Marcus, on that one.
Good stuff. So this year, 2021, yourself and Josh Grace paced the Women's League group for this year's Olympic Marathon Trials. And I understand that Dave Bedford gave a pep talk before the start. Can you share any of the advice that he shared with the athletes?
Just, it was almost fairly direct. Look, you know, men, you stay this side, women, you stay this side. You know, just, it was kind of a direct, do this and do it bloody well. And everyone did. You know, just being in the presence of Dave is pretty cool anyhow. So I think a lot of us may have even been slightly starstruck just listening to him speak.
Yeah, he carries a lot of gravitas because obviously the work that he's done and just the running that he's, you know, what he's done in terms of the sport. So I think that's amazing. And yeah, I think it's so cool when you sort of hear those kind of, that bit of advice really. And yeah.
And just, you know, and equally just thanked everyone there, you know, thanks for turning up and just give it your best shot. So it was nice to hear from a great athlete like Dave himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just sort of thinking, you know, as a fan watching, and I think I said this to you privately as well, it's always fascinating to think about like the conversations that you're having during the race, because we're watching it, but, you know, I can't lip read, so I can't really work out what's happening. I mean, can you sort of share what kind of discussions are taking place? Firstly, from like two points, firstly, between the pacers and the winner, Steph Davis. And secondly, the conversations between yourself and Josh.
So I think with Josh and I, we obviously had this serious job to do. We had to get the pace right. So Tom asked us to go through in 74 minutes and keep that pace going up until 30K. That was our job. And so Josh and I were just communicating about the speed, whether we were going too fast or too slow. Some of the girls were quite eager to push on, maybe a little bit early doors. And it was simply just a little gesture with our hand, just telling them to slow down. So a lot of the conversation that Josh and I were having were with, in terms of the pace. And as we were approaching different turns, the wind would hit you from different angles. So it was a case of, okay, Josh, let's get fairly close together and try and shelter these girls as much as we can, and then we'd encourage the girls to get fairly close to us. We just wanted to do our job as best as we could. We went through halfway in 74.05, so pretty much spot on, and pretty much kept that pace going until 30K. Some of the girls were dropping off, I think maybe kind of 22, 23K, when it starts to get a little bit too hard. But in terms of Steph, she was just phenomenal. Yeah, she, I mentioned on another podcast, the Runner's World one, she was just itching to go. And it was wonderful to see her run so well.
Yeah, absolutely. She looked like she had a lot more in the tank, but obviously was saving it for the Olympics, which is probably the right move. Yeah. But it just looks so comfortable. But obviously when you say it looks comfortable, she's obviously done the work to make it look comfortable.
Absolutely. You could tell that Steph had done the homework. She was ready. And yeah, 2:27:16, I think it was on the course was quick, but the weather conditions weren't so kind. So it's exciting to see what maybe Steph could do, you know, certainly in the Olympics, but one of these courses, maybe Berlin, Chicago, Frankfurt, you know, certainly I believe there's a sub 2:26 there.
Absolutely. And you sort of spoke about, you know, as a pacer, you've got a role to do. You've got to get to 30K or halfway at a certain time. And then you've got like the pressure, not pressure, but, you know, people saying, can you push on, push it not, you know, or whatever. But I guess in your mind, you think, well, actually, I'm here to do a job. So I have to keep it at this pace, because obviously if I go too quick, then there's going to be questions put back to me.
100%. And also these girls, they're trying to achieve something which is so remarkable, going to the Olympics. So you just don't want to be responsible for screwing that up. So if the pace was slightly too quick, you panic, because you're a marathon runner yourself, Marcus. If you overcook it early doors, the consequences can be pretty rubbish. So it was a case of sticking to that pace. I think it was 5:39. And as I say, we pretty much got it spot on. It was hard work. I was hurting at 30K. I'll be honest with you, although I've run quicker, I was really nervous. I was a bit unsure whether I could actually get to 30K, if I'm honest, when Tom asked me, Tom Bedford, Dave's son. And I did say to Josh at about 28K, look, should one of us carry on, because Steph was out on her own. Do you want to carry on, Josh, or shall I? And fortunately, Josh said, I'll happily carry on if you want, Kev. And I was showing a lot of teeth off at that point.
I think you made such an important point there, because although you say, you know, you could run a quicker pace, there's still pressure for you to run at that even pace for that day. And, you know, you've got all the preparation still has to be right as well.
And Tom had he contacted me maybe 3 weeks beforehand. I think a couple of pacemakers may have not so much let him down, but became injured. So Tom asked if I could help him out. And I guess being a little bit older, you realise the importance of the job. So I just wanted to get it right. And yeah, it was great. And then Josh Grace, who is a remarkably talented athlete, he stayed with Steph for, I think, another 5 or 6K after. So he did a brilliant job.
Good stuff. And listening to the commentary and even speaking to some old school runners, I was wondering to get your thoughts on this. Like, for the Olympic trials, for example, I know you guys were there to pace, but some people don't know, they're not fans of pacers because they feel like it takes away from the athletes having to think for themselves and pace it correctly or race. I mean, what's your kind of thoughts on, you know, the importance of having a pacer, but then also allowing the athletes to kind of do what they do? And if they blow up, they blow up. If they win, they win.
Yeah. I can see both sides of the argument. For the athletes trying out for the Olympics, because of the standards that they have to hit, and these standards are so tough, I think, you know, if you can put pacemakers in there that can help these guys achieve their goals and their ambitions, then I'm all for it under those circumstances. Because potentially somebody could have finished in the first or second in that race, but not run the qualifying time, and then not have made the Olympics. And so I think the pacemakers are there to help them achieve that time, which then can allow them to go on and and go to an Olympics, which everyone, every kid who runs dreams of, then I can't see how that's a bad thing personally.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as a nation, you kind of want to make sure that you give the athletes the best chance of getting there. So it's kind of like, here is some assistance up to a point.
Yeah, for sure. The sacrifices these athletes make, you want to see them be rewarded in some way, and by making the major championships. So yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, but it was still quite interesting as well, you know, to see kind of the lead women kind of like battling even behind you guys as well. And it was still like, it was such a funny thing. It was still racing, but it was contained within a certain period of time. So yeah, you saw people kind of moving along. But like you said, Steph just looked, you know, she was just like she was like on your six the whole time.
She was great. It was tough because my coach, a wonderful man, a guy, Richard Partridge, his daughter Lily Partridge, she was hoping to make the team, and I'd have loved to have seen Lily have made the team, but obviously it wasn't her day. So I saw Lily drop off the pace, and that was, I felt really, you know, I felt awful for her, and obviously Natasha just missing the time slightly. But that is just the nature of racing and the nature of trying to qualify for these championships.
And that's the really hard thing about marathon training, because all these athletes put so much time and effort to get there in the best shape. And, you know, we can do everything right. We can go to sleep at the right time. We can do all the right S&C. We can try and do the right training. And sometimes things may or may not work. But ultimately, the marathon owes you nothing. And sometimes we might not win, but we still keep coming back. And it's just interesting why we kind of put ourselves through that.
Yeah, keep on showing up, I guess, because we love it.
True, yeah. But yeah, for the women that you mentioned as well, I mean, we just hope that, you know, they come back strong for, you know, the next couple of races.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. So moving from running to the reason why so many people find you so inspirational is sort of thinking back to your father, who died at 52 from heart attack. You're a husband and father of three children yourself, as we mentioned, and you've also had heart surgery where you had four holes, including one which was 1.78 centimetres, which meant you were losing between like 20 to 25% oxygen for every heartbeat. With that being said, you know, with what's happened with your father and also your sister, which you've not mentioned, and yourself, I mean, how do you kind of look at life differently? Or has it made you kind of look at life in a different way?
I guess I've known no different. I lost my sister when I was 9 years old, and it was an awful time for my parents and for my brother. But my parents never, I guess, kind of neglected us. You know, they were still incredible, positive people. So I think with losing my sister, I kind of grew up thinking it, you know, you naturally feel cheated. And the same with my dad when he died so young. But equally super grateful that I had three incredible years with my sister. You know, I never trade in those 3 years that I had with her. They were incredible. And I learned so much from her, her resilience, just her smile. And, you know, we're talking about a child that struggled to walk and talk, you know, every day of her 3 years. And my father, again, 52, I kind of in my early 20s, and it was completely sudden, had a heart attack and died at work. I was down the running track and police come and pick me up and told me. It was heartbreaking, but I had 20 odd great years with my dad, and I'd rather take those short 20 years that I had with him than potentially still have my dad around and have no relationship with him whatsoever. So I look at my glasses always half full as opposed to half empty. I was blessed and lucky to have had them in my life. And the same in my heart, holes in my heart, just forever grateful that they picked them up, patched me up, and I'm here continuing to do something that I absolutely love.
Absolutely. But like you said, you don't know any different because it's just your life and this is the way things have happened. But say when you look at some other people, and do you ever think you're leaving so much on the table, or kind of making like these assumptions about life that aren't so, you could be doing more basically?
Yeah. I mean, for me, whenever I'm faced with a challenge, I just think about, you know, kind of the challenges that maybe my sister had. So I'm just like, right, okay, let's tackle this head first. We're going to get through this, and tomorrow morning, you know, the birds will be singing and hopefully the sun will be shining, and then we can just crack on. So we're all allowed to feel a bit rubbish now and then, but you know, you have to draw upon whatever positivity that you can just to keep moving forward.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, like positivity isn't always this kind of sunshine and sprinkles. It's sometimes it's just, it's like a 3 out of 10 for that day, and it might be that best 3 out of 10 you can give.
Definitely, you know, there's time, like when my dad passed away, God, it was just awful. You know, my poor mum, she lost her daughter and she lost her husband, and she was in a bad way, but she managed to kind of find the strength and to carry on and smile, and she's a remarkable woman. You know, my kids are here now, and they've given her a new lease of life, and I certainly draw upon her as motivation and resilience to just try and be grateful for what you've got and enjoy the time you have on this wonderful world.
I think that's, yeah, so well said, to be honest. And you've done many interviews before where you've been asked similar questions about what we've spoken about, the Olympic trials, so the heart condition, father, your sister. You've been asked a lot of the same questions. So if it was you sitting in my chair, what would you ask yourself, and what topic would you want to talk about, that how you're feeling about now that you've not been asked before?
Oh, goodness, you caught me off guard, Marcus. I don't know.
I hope in a good way.
Yeah, no, you have. Yeah, certainly. I don't know. Yeah, maybe, you know, kind of, but everything I'm thinking of, people have asked me, so you've really caught me off guard here. I guess just my future aims and my goals. I may have mentioned earlier, 41 years old now, so I'm getting old. But you know, I still have ambitions to run quicker than I've ever run before. Still kind of striving to be, you know, the very best version of myself. So I guess, you know, what's your future plans? But I guess because of my story and the holes in my heart and people going through struggles and maybe draw upon that as a bit of inspiration, that's usually what people ask me.
Actually, that was going to lead on to my next point of the conversation as well. We talked about, you know, your future plans. And my assumption was that you want to go for the Berlin Marathon with the goal of sub 220. Is that the case?
I'm not too sure. I mean, I definitely would like to break 220. You know, maybe I will, maybe I not, I won't, but I believe I can. You know, I think, you know, if you have this goal that you've always wanted to achieve, you know, you've got to, there's no point not believing you can run that time. So for me, sub 220, I would have liked to have possibly done Berlin, but I think off of the back of winning the virtual New York Marathon last year, I think I may be doing New York Marathon. And you know, as we know, New York is quite a tough course, so I may struggle to break 220 there. I think it'll be a case of just going there and try and run as hard as I possibly can and pick off a few scalps and maybe win the, or maybe challenge for the one of the vets V40 category.
New York is an incredible race, and it's one of my favorite races, but like you said, it's quite a challenging race, and I know you probably know this already. Other people have told you, but it's definitely a race of like several parts. You know, you've got to manage your race, and yeah, I think the last few miles is, you know, challenging, but it's not impossible. I mean people still run PRs there, and you know, sometimes adversity brings out the best in us. So yeah, I love that course, and I hope you do well there as well.
Oh, I'll certainly be picking your brains, Marcus. You know, you can help me, yeah, tell me what sections that I need to get my head around and visualize before I attempt that race.
No worries. But I think for me, it's the start, which is kind of different as well, because say like London or whatever, there's not too much of a gap between, you know, getting there and starting. Whereas New York, you're up about 6 in the morning, at least probably be a bit earlier, about that sort of time. You get there and you're kind of still waiting around, you know, for several hours. I think it doesn't start to like 9, just after 9:45, I think. And, you know, there's the pre-breakfast and then there's the kind of breakfast before you start. So it's just trying to make sure you keep all that energy contained. It's a weird one. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, if you're going for a run, I mean, you might get up early anyways to eat and let things digest and whatnot, but it's such an extra bit of time.
Yeah.
It's so different to normal.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's, if I do it, it'd be great. I think I'm really fortunate. New Balance are really good to me. So yeah. I think it may be New York sponsor that race and part of their campaign. But we shall see. Watch this space, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't want to sort of put you off of it by saying that early start, because once you start running it, like, the people, the race is just incredible. So yeah, I hope you get to do it anyway. So
I'm sure it'll be fine. Three kids, Marcus. I'm up most mornings very, very early.
Exactly. There's no choice there. I just want to go back to the goal about running a fast marathon. Now, some people might think, it's just like, what is the motivation to run it? I mean, like, for me, I look at you and I think, what is there beyond kind of running a sub 220? I mean, what sort of gets you out of bed? Because obviously, I think a fast time is an external thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not really enough for motivation to get out of bed when it's cold and it's windy, it's raining, it's snowing. So what kind of gets you out of bed to think, I want to go out there and see what my best looks like in the marathon distance?
Having children, I want to be a real positive role model on those kids. So if they can see me striving and working towards a goal, and hopefully I can tick off that box. And if I don't, I can say I gave it my very best, and my kids can say, well, you know, Daddy did try really hard to achieve that. They're at that age where they get it now. So that's my motivation to get out there and strive to run a sub 220. Obviously, they have no idea what a sub 220 marathon is, but for me, it's something I've always wanted to achieve. Even before I knew about my holes in my heart, when I turned to the marathon running in memory of my dad, it was, I'd love to break 220 one day. And then having my heart patched up, I feel right. I've been given a second chance. And I'm pretty close to it now. Let's give it, you know, maybe one or two more shots.
Yeah, absolutely. So say you achieve that goal, which I have no doubt you'll do, what would be next?
I think I probably will just hang up my running shoes then. I still run. I love running. But maybe turn into, you know, a recreational, not so much recreational runner, but just really pop the structure to one side and just run on feel every other day, maybe. At the moment, I'm running between 80 and 90 miles a week. So it's pretty full on. So maybe park up that structure for a bit. But I'm sure, you know, 12 months down the line, there'll be a new challenge. There'll be a new shoe out that can make you run maybe a little bit faster. So I may start to think about having a bash at some of the other PBs that I have. But for me at the moment, I'd like to break 220, and I believe if I can get in that shape, then maybe a 65 half, hopefully a sub 30 minute 10k could potentially be achievable as well.
Awesome. I think it's so cool hearing that, and something that made me I was thinking about when you were talking about there is like in achieving the goal and what's next. And I was listening to this entrepreneur talking about sometimes, like, when you've done something big and you've achieved what you needed to achieve, like, sometimes you just need to step back for a year, just do nothing. For example, I'm not saying you just quit running, but and just to do something where you just allow yourself the process to sort of refine that hunger, because our whys and our motivations change. And, you know, even with running a life, we can get to a stage where it kind of gets kind of to a level where we're kind of comfortable.
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes to find that next thing to push us. Obviously, within reason, we know you've got family, you've got kids and stuff. You can't just be completely rogue and just be like, I'm going off for a year to train, leave me alone.
Oh, yeah. My wife, she'd tell me off. Don't you worry about that. But I think when you do achieve something or you give it your best shot, and regardless whether it happens or not, it's important to take a step back and embrace that journey and what you've just achieved or tried to achieve. It's important to reflect back on that and be proud of yourself, and then just allow that body time to recover and to repair, and just take on board all that hard work that you tried to achieve that goal. Just embrace that journey.
Absolutely. And competing at the high level, and you've seen it with the athletes that you run with and even in the Olympic trials, most people are working hard and working smart in a combination. But what things do you think separate the very best from the rest?
I guess having a good support team around you as well, and the right, correct people, good advice is pretty essential. You know, you and I spoke about the marginal gains. I think somebody to give you that nudge to make sure that, you know, you are on top of your S&C, you are on top of your stretching, your hydration, your nutrition, and all the other external factors kind of taken care of. So, you know, I think for us, when you've got a busy lifestyle, you've got family, you've got work commitments and mortgages and all the rest to pay, it's hard to throw yourself into something 100%. So I think a good support team is essential, having a coach that can steer you in the right direction. And obviously just an incredible work ethic.
Yeah. Maybe it's just experience, but I really love that answer, because sometimes when I've asked people that, they turn it around and think about the stuff that they've done themselves.
Right.
And as actually you said, I think even Elliot Kachobi says this as well, just, you know, you are what you are, but without your team, you can't be as good as you could be. And I think that's so important, whether it's a good coach or, you know, S&C. And as much as we like to think, you know, sometimes we can do things in our own strength and for our own steam, you know, we've had help to get to where we are. You know, someone's had to pass on their knowledge for you to kind of be the best that you can be.
Absolutely. There's so many wonderful coaches that have helped me along my journey. And even now, I still am in regular contact with other coaches and just asking them tons of questions and interested in their training methods. I have my own coach myself, Richard Partridge, who is incredibly knowledgeable. Despite that, you know, I'm coaching a lot of athletes myself. So I think, you know, there's a lot of knowledge out there, and it's important to talk to these people and speak with the S&C guys and prehab and rehab people, kind of accept that you don't know everything, and there's a lot of people out there that know a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking of coaching as well, and I don't know whether you think this is the case or not, but you'll tell me if I'm wrong. Although you can go out and you could know things technically and what the athlete should be doing at a certain time, I almost feel that the art of coaching also comes down to understanding and managing the person and understanding the person.
Couldn't agree more. It is important to listen to that person and communicate with that person that you're coaching. Communication is key. It's everything, really. If somebody's having a stressful time at work or stressful time at home, there's no point setting them an interval session on that day where they're going to grind themselves into the ground and put themselves in a hole that is going to be impossible to get out of. So, yeah, it's kind of the athlete's needs is far more important, and you have to listen to that person. And back to what I was saying earlier, that person, hopefully you can ingrain that it's important that they listen to their body, and by doing so they can communicate with you and you can adapt and amend their training maybe on a day-to-day basis as opposed to a monthly basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And this question is a little bit selfish because it's targeted towards me. that's the way it is, really. If it's your podcast, you could ask these questions. So something I'm keen to know for my training is, I'm obviously working my way down from a sub-3 down to working towards a London Championship place, which is sub-240. Now, can you sort of pinpoint the key things that you did in your training to help you go from sub-245 down to 228 in Hamburg?
Yeah. So things like threshold runs were really important for me, and making sure that my threshold runs were threshold. I didn't get too carried away and I wasn't racing them. So a lot of tempo work was important, and big sessions as well. Things like 10x3 minutes with a minute recovery, with a decent warm up and a decent warm down. They were really important. I think things that also your nutrition is important on race day. I found that I was probably utilizing all my glycogen fairly early in the race, and my fastest kilometers were between 20 and 25K. Every single marathon I did, I was getting carried away at that point. And after 25K, I was just having a massive glycogen depletion. So I made sure that when I absolutely, Valencia, for example, where I ran 2:22, I made sure at kilometer 20 to 25, I just held back. I got good nutrition down me. And that one, it was, I didn't want it to be my fastest 5 kilometers. If anything, I wanted it to be one of my slowest, but just know that I was in control. And then I could push on from 25, 30K when the race really starts. So maybe have a look at previous marathon splits and see if there is any correlation where you're going a bit quicker or slower. But I guess just believe in the process and communicate with your coach. Get used to the race pace. And I'm sure, Marcus, you'll achieve that championship start.
So thank you for that. And all those bits of advice are just so solid. And it's made me think about conversations I've had with my coach recently. So I want to go back to the point you talked about, sort of race management, and it's so important because so often it's quite easy to run just too fast above your threshold, and then you blow up at some point during the race and you can't get it back. So it's just about kind of making sure that, obviously, you've trained it in training, but when you're running, you're kind of, not in all cases depending on the person, but generally just to run just underneath your threshold to a certain point and then kick on, because once you've burnt through your glycogen, it's hard to kind of get it back. You're just trying to manage that process.
Absolutely. It's hard work. It's the flick of a light switch. Once it happens, it happens. And as you say, it's very hard to kind of get it back. I did London Marathon 2018 and I was in really good shape and I was convinced I would break 2:20, and I just went off stupid. Kind of first 5 kilometer pace was probably on for 2:16, 2:17, and I knew I was screwing this race up in the first 16-17 minutes, and you kind of think, I've made my bed now, I've just got to roll with this. And I you have to kind of take a step back and think, right, okay, today's the day 100 people don't break 2:17, so just let those people run away from you and you will pick them off as the race goes along. So if you have a game plan, stick to it and don't fall into the trap of anyone else's race during the first 5, 10, 15K of any marathon. You just stick to your game plan and you see it through.
100%. And listening to what you just said there in 2018, obviously that was the hot year as well, which is quite challenging. And what you talked about there, I've had a similar experience when I did that in New York. The last time I ran, I went too quick in the first 20 miles, and it's the last 10K, which you've really got to manage, because they're not, I don't know what to say the hills, because they're not, but it's just like a rolling course towards the end.
Yeah.
And once you're kind of really getting into that point where you're hitting the wall, you do not want to see hills. It feels like a molehill, feels like Everest. So it's tough.
But how great is it when you get it right, though? You know, when you are feeling good at 35K and you're on the other end, you know, you're passing those people that have clearly done what you've done in the past, and that feeling of just pushing on and knowing that you're going to hit your goal and you're going to hit your time, it's so rewarding, and it's a great experience. It's priceless.
Yeah, absolutely, because you know what it's like to be on the other side, so you have a lot more gratitude for it as well. And even we spoke about the stuff before about the threshold work as well. That's where you don't, you know, say X amount of time on and then like a minute off, you know, just basically pushing through that lactate barrier, basically pushing it along, shunting it along to improve your fitness. And in an important point you said about there, about the threshold as well, is like, are you actually working in your threshold pace? Because sometimes you could be set some work like that, but you're not actually working within that zone.
Yeah.
You're working just underneath it. And so you're not actually getting the gains from it as well. So we could go off into a proper tangent.
Definitely,
about this.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
I think it's solid advice, though. And the long runs as well, I think they're so important, because for me, obviously from a physical side, but from a mental side, because I feel sometimes when I speak to some people, they have this idea that they're going to do something on race day that they've not done in training.
Although you're not going to run the full 26.2 miles in training, if you do like 18, 20 miles at your race pace after a full week of training, you know, unless something goes really wrong, that you're still going to be able to do it.
Yeah. I mean, this is it. You kind of your Sunday runs, just try and kind of mimic things that you're going to do on race day. And that may be getting up at the same time as your race, eating the same kind of breakfast, trying to take a gel at the same time that you're hoping to take one during race days. As you say, Marcus, we could go on all day about this, couldn't we? It's back to, you know, being a runner, I guess, runner's life, right?
Exactly. And just thinking about the mental side of running as well, you know, do you ever take time to stop and reflect and just enjoy the moments? I know you're, you know, in working to be fast, but do you ever spend time slowing down and just enjoying running and just enjoying, I guess, the wind against your face type thing as well?
Yeah, I do. And I love running. So every run's enjoyable. And but I do take times to reflect back on what I've achieved there, especially before I had the heart surgery. I run some pretty quick times on the track. And also I run a 2:25 with four holes in my heart. It's things like that I look back on and I'm really proud that I achieved. There's no regret. There's no thinking, I wonder what I could have achieved had I had my heart repaired as a youngster. It's just a case of, well, I achieved that and I'm really proud that I did that. And now let's try and see if I can go a little bit quicker now it is repaired.
It's like a legal EPO there, isn't it, to be honest, with the heart repair?
And it felt like that. It was crazy. Once they were patched up,
yeah,
it really did feel, as you say, a legal EPO. Hence, it's in the results, my personal best, despite getting older, I'm still getting quicker from 5K all the way through to marathon.
I know this isn't the case for everyone, but looking at yourself, and they say even looking at someone like Sarah Hall, why do you think some people get better at the marathon as they get older?
I think with a marathon, you learn a lot. And every time you attempt a marathon, whether it goes right or wrong, you can take something away from that race that's going to make your experience all the better next time. And that may be a case that you went off too hard or too easy, but you can draw upon that as something to put in place for your next one. So I think with a marathon, you just continue to learn and you continue to use those experiences to better the next.
I agree. And for the races and the days of training that don't go to plan, for example, where it doesn't all click, I mean, how do you maintain a good attitude when in the not so great moments?
Back to what I mentioned previously, I'm lucky to be able to do this. I'm lucky to have two legs, two arms and run and take in the fresh air. So I the sessions might not go well, but I'm blessed to have this opportunity to give it a go. So yeah, you may feel a bit rubbish that you didn't hit those times, the training session or the race didn't go that well, but I'm lucky to be here doing it. So just be grateful for that.
Yeah. And I know we've spoken a little bit about this before, so in terms of like going for your best and things like that, but when we look at the word potential, what does that word mean to you?
For me, potentially could happen. It could happen if you put in the work. So, yeah, I mean, I guess potential, if you look at an athlete, you see them running, you may look at their biomechanics and you could say potentially this kid looks like they've got the right biomechanics here to go in and run super, super fast. But you could have all the potential in the world, but you've got to have that work ethic also.
Yeah. And something I was thinking about as well in relation to what you just said is, in terms of running and life in general, but it shows that more in running, that you tend to have more, I don't want to make a sweeping statement here, but more losses in terms of wins where things don't go to the plan. And it's like how you kind of respond back to that, those kind of moments.
Just know that when it does go to plan and when it does happen and it all clicks, it's going to feel bloody great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It does. I think it just sort of reframes your mind. I'm not saying this for you personally, but it can reframe your mind in terms of like taking those sort of experiences into a learning experience and being able to see things a little bit more broader rather than so in kind of in a macro kind of level.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my life losses, they've made me the person that I am and made me grateful for everything I have. So although they are losses, equally just grateful to have had them for a small period and, you know, a period of growing up. So, you know, I feel lucky in that respect.
Absolutely. And as we move towards the final stretch of the conversation, are there any guests that you would like to hear on the show?
Yeah, I guess there's a few. Be good if you could get, if you could get someone like Eli Kipchoge, someone like that, that'd be pretty remarkable, right? You know, so you've got Eli Kipchoge and then we've got you, Marcus. You're like the Eli Kipchoge of the podcast world. So that'd be a great combination. Yeah, there's tons of people out there. It'd be great to get Steph maybe on the show, you know, have a chat with her about her experiences. So yeah, Elid, Steph, if you're listening, get in touch with Marcus.
Awesome. And if you were interviewing, I guess, either, what would you ask them?
I guess for Steph, yeah, I'll be interested to find out about her training. You know, there's a lot of people going on about how, you know, her mileage is potentially relatively low and she's doing loads of cross training. It'd be great to kind of hear her take on that. I'm sure Steph is running decent mileage and training really hard with, you know, treading the pavement, but it'd be interesting to hear about her cross training. And Kipchoge, I mean, wow, just listening to his voice, yeah, he's just such a cool, humble, incredible person. So, you know, just tell him to talk about whatever and it'd just be great to listen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, two great guests. And it'd be amazing if I could get them both on, to be honest. obviously separately, to be honest, because I think, yeah, they both need their own spaces to speak. So I'm just sort of thinking, so as we kind of move towards the end, if you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, probably what I know now in terms of like listening to my body. Just as a youngster, maybe just trained too hard all the time, just wanted it, and would just bury myself every single session, every single run, and, you know, would end up having a stress fracture or a hernia. So, yeah, listen to that body, you know, and you don't have to throw yourself into it at 100 miles an hour every single day. Structure, smart training will make you a better athlete. And if you have, you know, like if you have a coach or that accountability, kind of listen to them and trust the process. So, yeah, that's probably what I would say to my younger self.
Yeah. And we know, obviously, the impact that running has in your life. And we've spoken about your outlook. Can you name anything else that makes you feel empowered?
Yeah, certainly. I guess seeing my kids smile or achieve something, you know, and seeing them feel proud about themselves, that's a pretty powerful thing for me. My middle boy, Louis, he's a fantastic football player. You know, you see him score for his football team and, you know, there's just a big grin on his face. And Finley, who's 9, is just a wizard with Lego. You're just seeing him create these phenomenal creations and seeing him so proud of himself just makes me feel good. And I've got to mention it, otherwise she'd pull me up. And Poppy, my daughter, you know, she's a great little artist. She's a good little football player herself. So seeing her dance or just being incredible, wonderful, that makes me feel pretty special, pretty empowered.
That's awesome. Because like you say, although our kids come from us, like they're their own people. Obviously, I know that sounds stupid, but it's amazing to watch their personalities and just them express themselves, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Just seeing them grow, seeing them become their own personalities, their own characters is great. I love it. And they're so different. Yeah, that's the most rewarding thing for me.
What is one non-negotiable behavior, habit or superstition that you do daily?
Don't walk under ladders. If I'm running, I will not run over three drains. I've always done that. Yeah, those two is something I do on a daily basis. I probably say, you know, far too much as well. But yeah, superstitious, don't run under ladders and don't run over three drains. And always salute one magpie.
Why is that?
I don't even know why, Marcus. It's something I've ever done since I was a kid that I just continue to do. And I've been pulled up by some of my running mates on that on many occasions, and I still haven't got an answer why.
If it works, it works. Just keep going.
Exactly. That's it.
Kevin, it's been awesome speaking to you on the podcast. I'm so inspired by your journey, and even like before, obviously seeing you, obviously pacing the Olympic trials. I remember messaging you going like, "Well done" about New York as well, and it's just so cool to sort of see just the impact that you're having, continues in the running community beyond the coaching, and you know, you getting the recognition I think feel like you deserve, because there's so much to running, and you know, there's so many people that make it what it is. So no, thank you for what you do.
Marcus, it is a real pleasure, and it's great, you know, catching up with you, and equally your journey is super inspiring. So you carry on doing what you're doing, and yeah, influencing the runner community the way that you are.
Thank you. And where can people get in touch with you and follow your journey?
Yeah, so Instagram, to be honest, I don't even know what my Instagram name is, so you might have to help me out there, Marcus. And just the website, realrunners.co.uk, and we also have a fantastic new Instagram running club that we've just put in place to try and create a fantastic running community, and we have over 100 members. It's fairly inexpensive, and I get to coach these tons of people, set them a couple of sessions every week in a video, telling them what to do and the structure of those sessions, just for a bit of accountability, structure and motivation. So yeah, jump on the website, all the information's there, or Instagram. People can DM me, and it may be a day or so, but I'll always try and get back to them.
Awesome. Just to clarify, your Instagram is Kev Quinn, all one word with a double N at the end with an underscore. So Kev Quinn underscore, all one word.
Awesome. Thank you, Marcus.
Thanks for being a guest on The Runner's Life, Kevin.
Pleasure. Take care.
Cheers. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Runner's Life. If you found value in this episode and you want to support the show, please share with your community, post on your social media channels, and encourage them to listen and subscribe. If you want to support my work directly, you can become a member on Patreon at www.patreon.com/arunnerslife. If you want to get updates on the podcast, or you want to see what I'm up to, you can follow me on Instagram at arunnerslife_podcast and at TheMarathonMarcus. Your time is valuable, so thank you for spending your time listening to this episode of A Runner's Life podcast.